Hey, it's Jeff and Jeremy from the Ultra Running Guys. And if you're here, you probably already know that we started this podcast to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey.
But what you may not know is that in addition to this podcast, we also host two live races in the Wilmington, North Carolina area that are designed to do the same.
The first is the Hydra, which takes place on April 22nd and has a 50K individual. 50K relay, yeah, you can bring your friends in case you don't want to do it by yourself. And this year, we're also offering a half marathon, which is basically a half of a Hydra. We can promise you that for any of those races, it will be unlike any race you've ever experienced before.
And then on September 16th, we host the final countdown. And whether you've never run before or you're a hardcore ultra veteran, this race is designed to help you find your limits. And we will be there to celebrate with you.
Yep. So mark your calendars, share with your friends, and check us out on the ultrarunningguys.com website. You can search for both those events on the site, or you can even check out the links in the show notes for more info.
And with that, enjoy the episode. And remember, when in doubt, just show up.
I feel like we both were really depressed. We talked about it a lot where we were like, that was our focus. Like Trail to 100 was our life. And when it was over, we were just like, well, now what do we do? It's done. Like what now?
It was kind of depressing. It was like this big, I thought that we'd run 100 miles and I'd be a forever changed man. And I just go kick butt at everything else that I do in life because I ran 100 miles, but that was wrong.
we still say that though. We're like, we can do it because we've ran 100 miles. Yeah.
And welcome back to the Ultra Running Guys. You got Jeremy Reynolds and Jeff Winchester of the Ultra Running Guys. And the reason that we're here is to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey. And so first off, if you're back, we appreciate your support. Thank you so much. We're going to ask that you share with your friends. You tell people what's in your ears because that is how we grow. And if you're new, thank you so much for taking the time. But here's the deal. We're going to get right into the show. So our guests tonight are a husband and wife duo who you may recognize because they're the co-hosts of the Trail to 100 podcast, which they started to document their own journey to tackle their first 100-mile run in 2020.
That's dangerous, you know.
True. Since then, they have continued their podcast with the goal of helping and inspiring new runners tackle ultra distances as well. And so he is currently signed up to run the Scout Mountain 100 in June, and she is a run coach and a black belt who launched her own runner's self-defense program, which is called Run Without Fear. So stick around to hear what they have learned in their own ultra journeys and why they're so passionate about pouring back into the ultra community. And with that, Jacob and Melody Bateman, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
We're excited to be here.
It's always exciting to interview other podcast hosts, not just guest, but podcast hosts.
Well, and so I'll be honest, it was super interesting preparing for this, right? Because, you know, obviously we're going to talk about you guys, but almost everything that you have, you've documented on the journey, right? So it was like, okay, so how do we have a good, fresh conversation and still talk about your story and everything without just completely recreating what you guys do all the time? But we really want to kind of put you at that first 100-mile decision, right? You're thinking about, hey, we should do the 100-mile. Take us to that. Tell us about the conversation. How does that come about? When was it? Why did you have it?
Well, we kind of had this, this cycle where we would, so we ran a marathon together. Then after the marathon, we kind of got lazy and stopped running. And then we ran a 50 and then we got lazy and stopped running. And so we were kind of in this like low point of where we like weren't running and weren't doing anything. And we just were ready to do something else. And it just made sense to do the 100-mile distance next because the one we did before was the 50 and we just want to do something big. So,
and to preface that even more, we did the marathon when we were dating, and then we did the 50-mile race within our first year of being married, and we had graduated college and we were adults now, right? And so we
both
were
doing the 9-to-5 thing,
working our full-time jobs, but we were realizing that being an adult, wasn't so much fun after all.
We were honestly depressed.
Yeah.
We were like, so is this it? Like, we just work 9 to 5 for the rest of our lives and
yeah,
like, this isn't fun.
And so we just wanted more at the time, you know, like just to be challenged, to feel like we could dig deeper. We wanted to feel like
we were growing.
Yeah.
We just kind of felt like we weren't growing. Yeah.
Post-college, we just felt like we were working a job and there wasn't a lot of growth going on. And we thought that 100-mile distance, when we discovered ultras, we were like, man, that's going to make us grow.
And we wanted something that excited us, because we realized like we ran a 50. And so signing up for another 50 just didn't excite us, because we already knew we could do it. So we wanted something big that made us scared, that was exciting. So the 100-mile distance got us excited. So
yeah, but so at some point somebody's sitting across from the other person and it's like, we need to do something, we've been lazy, we're getting kind of, you know, we've been adulting for too long, we're still young, right? But we've got to challenge ourselves. And one of you looks at the other person and says, you know what we should do, we haven't been running, we should go run 100 miles. How does that happen?
And who even, that's my question.
I don't even know who brought it up.
You know, I don't even remember particularly the conversation where like, we're going to do this.
I honestly feel like we kind of mutually made the decision at the same time. Like yeah. We just kind of knew that that was the next step.
You know what?
Like, we're just so in sync. We just were like, okay, it's just time to run 100 miles.
Yeah. And so to set the time, so when was this? Because you guys originally planned to run it later 2020, but yeah. Was this like late 2019? Was this early 2020 when you're having this conversation?
Yeah, probably December of 2019.
Yeah.
Is when because we originally signed up for the Ute 100, and it was a little bit later because I remember the first races we wanted to sign up for, they were all full. And so we're like, well, we live out in Utah, and so basically the only 100 that kind of looked appealing to us was,
and it didn't have a wait list, yeah, was the Ute 100.
So yeah, I think it was December of 2019.
Well, and plus it said the most scenic race in Utah, and that excited us.
So it was a New Year's resolution,
I guess.
They had gotten adulting and fat and lazy is what they're saying, and they decided to make a New Year's resolution.
Well, and knowing part of you guys' story, and I have to go back and look and see when the book was released, but David Goggins, Can't Hurt Me, I think played a little bit of a role, at least in the conversation, or was probably a motivator.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, we didn't even know that ultras existed. So neither of us were big runners before we met each other. I guess fire meets fire. We just, I don't even know how it happened, because I remember when we were dating, actually, me and Melody, we were just walking around the block one night, and we had this conversation of like, yeah, I would never run a marathon. Like, you would have to sell your soul to run a marathon. Like, how do people even fit time, you know, to run that? And so, but then, you know, we just started running together and it just took off, but
it just escalated.
Yeah. So we weren't in the running world at all, but my brother had recommended David Goggins's book and we read that. And that's when we were like, oh, that's when the first 50 mile sign up came. Cause I was okay. Like, man, I want to go into that pain cave. I want to discover how much more is in there. You know, like, I want to make sure that I'm tapping into my potential and not just letting it rot away.
Well, and so the interesting thing is, and I think this is fascinating, right? So you guys decide to do it, but then you also decide to document it, which is how the podcast was born. Tell us about that. Like, how did that conversation come about? And was there a specific like inspiration for it?
Well, we made our own training plans. We didn't use coaches or anything. We just kind of did all of our own research. And when we wanted to run 100 miles, we started researching and we couldn't find anything for beginner trail runners. It was all like how to shave 2 seconds off of your 100-mile time, like all these elite athletes and how they win all these races. And we're like, we literally just want to cross the finish line. Even if we have to crawl across it like 1 minute before the cutoff, like we just want to cross the finish line. So we were like, you know, we should just document our journey for, you know, other runners like us who just want to cross the finish line. And we'll just talk about like what we're learning and help other beginners. So
I love that idea so much.
I don't know, when I decide I'm going to do a New Year's resolution, I'll tell my friends. I don't typically tell the world.
The world, right. Right.
And that it was, I think it was kind of another like form of accountability too. Yeah. Like we, because as we were doing this podcast and telling the world that we were doing it, like we had to run 100 miles. So.
I remember we recorded the first few episodes and I sat on it for a few weeks because I'm like, what are we doing here? And I remember when we finally when we made it public, we didn't tell anyone in our family. We didn't tell any friends.
We didn't tell anyone. We posted it.
Yeah, we just posted it. And I remember I saw like 7 downloads like that first day. And I was like, I can't believe that 7 people somehow found this and decided to listen to our experience of us training, you know, for our first 100. But we had gone through some running podcasts and we couldn't really find many that were relatable to our situation. And so we just were like, you know what? Let's just document our situation. We don't know that much about running right now. We know nothing about this distance. So let's just document us training and doing this for the first time. And hopefully someone who was in our situation would benefit from it.
And it was Jacob's idea. He was the one who wanted to do the podcast. Jacob was a sports announcer.
Yeah, I did a little bit of sports announcing in college. And so I had a little bit of background.
He loves this kind of thing. So it got him really excited. And I was like, sure, I'll do it with you. So
so when I was listening to one of your early episodes, I heard you reference, you talked about a video with two average guys that had run it. Was that the REI, How to Run 100 Miles?
Yes.
I love that video so much. If you're listening and you've never seen that, go Google How to Run 100 Miles. Those guys are hilarious, for one. But it is, we were talking about it earlier, it is true compared to a lot of the documentaries of the elite runners, which are fascinating and I love them, to see those guys just go through their everyday struggles and try to run down that mountain backwards because they're so chafed and all that. I love that video so much.
Yeah, I think every ultra runner needs to watch that. We need to watch that again. It's been a little bit since we've seen it.
It just makes you believe. I don't know, because those guys do seem so average, just, you know, working their jobs and just want to run 100 miles. So yeah, it's a great video that just, if you, you know, just feel like an average Joe, but want to do something great, you know, it's inspiring to watch that.
They suffered well.
They did suffer well.
Yeah.
They
suffered well.
So talking about the race itself, and again, we're not going to camp out too long here because you guys cover it, but you already mentioned you signed up for the Ute 100. We all know what happens in 2020. And so it did end up getting canceled. However, so we went and checked out the U100, and Jacob, I know you've run it since, but so our first 100 miler was the Umstead 100, which we talked about on the show a few times, 8,000 feet of gain, mainly like fire roads, right? You go look at the U100 and 21,000 feet of gain, average elevation of 8,700 feet. Like, this is no joke first race to target. And I know you said, yeah, most scenic and that's the available one. But at that point, did you guys like recognize how difficult of a race that was going to be?
We had no idea. Like, honestly, if we knew what we know now about 100 mile races, we would not have signed up for that race.
The 50 miler that we did the year before this was the Bryce Canyon 50, and that had like 8,000 feet of climbing total. So decent for a 50 miler out here, but actually a little more low key of climbing for a 50 mile out here in the Rockies. But yeah, so we had no idea. Honestly, no, we had no idea. And looking back, I think I'm grateful that it got canceled.
I bet you we would have DNF'd.
I think
if we did the U100, I don't know if we would have finished.
For that first go around, yeah, we probably would have, looking back.
Well, and so I don't think I said it specifically. You guys are kind of referenced, but you're out in Ogden, Utah. So there's a lot of elevation out there. And obviously Utah has some pretty gnarly races, but it is beautiful. But yeah, when we saw those numbers, we're like, wow, that was a...
Yeah, we were only thinking about scenery. So
we're like, oh, it's pretty.
That's just calling, this one. That's just being naive right there.
Yeah. So good.
So dangerous.
It is
so dangerous to make the choice that way. I'm just saying.
Well, yeah, but that's part of the, I mean, you know, the great thing is, right, that's part of which I'm sure now, because you guys have done some great episodes since, right? Hey, what lessons have we learned over the last 3 years? And here's kind of a reset. Here's some of the things that we know now that we didn't know then, which probably makes it really fun to go back and listen to some of the original episodes. But that's the value of the whole process,
right?
And what you guys do is to now be able to take that experience, and we'll talk about the podcast in a little bit, but take that experience and pour it back into people who want to do a similar thing and really be that thing that you were looking for, you know, when you decided to start it. But
how far in advance of the race did you find out it was being canceled? Like roughly when did you find out?
I think it was like right in the middle of our training.
Yeah.
I remember our training plan was like 30 something weeks and it was around week 15. So we're like halfway through our training.
Yeah.
When it got canceled.
Yeah. So I think it was like May time period that it got canceled, which actually was later for most races in 2020. Most of them called it right after everything shut down, but they held out a while and then they ended up canceling around May.
So when it gets canceled, obviously where we're going with the story is that you all decided to do your own 100 anyway, because why not? You've already done 15 of your 30 weeks of training and you're going to keep moving forward, right? So at some point you find out it's canceled. How did you turn the corner and say, well, let's just do our own?
Honestly, at first when it was canceled, I think it was almost a relief. Like at first it was like, oh, okay, well, that's a really good excuse to not do this. Maybe we can do it later. But we had a podcast and we told the world we're going to 100 miles. But I don't know. I think we just, it took us about 2 weeks before we officially decided to do our own.
And with that, like, you know, the idea had crossed my mind immediately after it was canceled. I'm like, well, we could do our own. But then I was like, okay, but then you need people there to crew you, you know,
you got
to
map out,
you got to map it out. And yeah. And it's just be like, that'd be like a full weekend commitment from family and friends to help us out. And we're just like,
well, it's like, so we've never ran 100 miles. So we're trying to figure out how to do that. Now we have to learn how to like
do it on our own. Yeah. And, but family reached out, a lot of family reached out when they heard it was canceled and they knew by this time they knew about our podcast. They had reached out and said, you know, if you just decide to do it on your own, I'd be willing to help. And when
a lot of people said that,
yeah,
like were rooting for us. Yeah. Yeah. And then not going to lie, we were like, and this is going to make the podcast even cooler.
Podcast pressure. Been there.
Well, and so we've talked to a few people, right? In 2020, I think 2020 was kind of like the year of, hey, I'm just going to do this on my own. But most people that we talked to did it in their neighborhood or did it, you know, in different areas. What you guys did, especially listening to the episodes, without going into all the details, you essentially decided, hey, we have to run this together from a safety perspective, right? Because it's going to be super hot and it's in areas where, you know, if we split up and the other person collapses or whatever, you know, we can't do it that way. So what was the hardest thing about planning it on your own, especially because you guys were in a pretty rugged area?
The hardest part was just trying to communicate with our family and friends and be like, hey, you need to be here at this point, but this could be anywhere between a 2 to 6 hour time period. And then getting them our food and like just making up all the boxes for people to grab.
So we're literally like texting people and calling people and like trying to organize this race while we were running it.
And then also weeks beforehand, we're having people come out and meet us and we're driving them around saying, hey, this is this aid station spot right here. And we're taking them up in the mountains on dirt roads because, you know, we're all about that, those scenic runs, right? We just being naive, like we still wanted to have a scenic run. And so it's just the communication with the other people involved, being your own race
and we had
director.
A lot of people that we were like managing and telling them where to go. Yeah. And how many people do you think we had?
From both sides of our family, we had a lot of people come out. It probably was like 30 people total throughout the race that came out to support. And so with a longer race, it was just, it was really stressful.
Yeah.
That was the hardest part. That might've been harder than running it, is directing the people.
I will say though, I'm going to give a disclaimer and then I'll be interested to hear how it compares. But yes, you know, you guys did self-supported, right? Difficult. But I will tell you, when I was listening, between the having the PT on call and your compression boots and sending mom home
to make noodle soup,
make some chicken noodle soup, and you know,
it sounded rough.
As a race director, you guys set up some pretty cush aid stations.
Did you realize at mile 15, he had somebody massaging his feet? He's laughing. They can't see him because, and he's actually crying like he did at one of the other things with a towel on his face. And so it's true.
We did have some super cush things happen to us. Yeah, we had it says self-supported and I'm putting up quotation marks, but like at one point my uncle had like brought out this table at an aid station at like 6 a.m. and had like peppermint tea. He had like a tea party thing set up.
Oh,
and
he literally like he decorated
yeah,
it.
Yeah, like
and
a
everything.
Lace cloth was on this table in the middle of the mountains and the trail. And
this is the funniest part. His brother brought a grill and was literally like they were having a barbecue. They were making burgers and they had chips and drinks. And then they set up this little like tent for us. And we literally had a flock, like everyone there. It was like a race. Right, but we were the only ones running it, so everyone was there just for us. So we'd sit down and we had like a flock of people like, what do you need? And everyone's like massaging our shoulders and massaging our feet, and we felt like celebrities. It was awesome.
They were glamping.
I was gonna say, so if you're listening and you're planning on your first 100 miler, whether it's self-supported or you know an official race
or Bateman supported,
yeah, if it's Bateman supported there's that. Yeah. That's the way to go if you can get it. But
we should sell that. Deal. Like, you want a self-supported race? Like, we'll come.
That's right.
Pay us, and we'll come aid station you and do it all for
Bring
you.
Bring Mama Bateman's chicken noodle soup.
That's
with
right.
You.
Yeah.
Now, so that said, so obviously we set that up. We do. I mean, you guys are gracious enough to say that you listen to the show. You know that we want to really focus on some of the tactical stuff as well, right? Hey, what can our listeners learn from? And so I think the story's awesome, but and we joke a little bit about that. But obviously, the course that you set up was not easy. Mm-hmm. And you guys worked through different things kind of all day. And so for everybody listening, you guys were out there for 40 hours and 45 minutes. And so, yes, I do know that you took some of the longer time at the aid station stuff. But when I heard that, I mean, it's one thing to be on feet, but just mentally and the sleep deprivation and all those kind of things had to be crazy. Specifically, we know there were some big down points. We want to talk about mile 60, really between mile 60 and 70. Set the scene, assume that people have not listened to the show. They haven't heard the story. Tell us that story. We want to kind of get there. And then we got some questions for you about it.
So when we kind of start laying in the dirt together, right?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
Well, I go back to like, I can see the trail that we're on. And so it's me and Jacob, and then Jacob's friend Ryan is pacing us. And this is super awkward because Ryan has no idea what to do. Jacob and I are like so tired. We're so depressed. We're disgusting. There's like snot all over our face. Like we're covered in sweat and dirt and like we're just depressed.
It's like 2-3 a.m.
And also, like, I don't think this is TMI because we're all ultra runners here, but our guts were messed up. So like we had to keep stopping, like going into the bushes to like go to the bathroom, and that was awkward because Ryan's there and I don't even know Ryan that well. And like Jacob and I are talking and we're literally like, are we going to do this? Like, do we want to do this? And at one point we just decided that we were going to lay down. And so we just laid down on the middle of this trail. And I just remember like laying there and being super depressed, and I closed my eyes. And then I remember opening my eyes and looking at Jacob, and there were bugs crawling on his face. And he didn't even care. And I could feel bugs on me. And I was like, I don't even care. And we just were laying there on the trail, just disgusting. Bugs are crawling all over us. And we were like, are we even going to do this? I don't even remember how we got back up. I don't remember how long we laid there.
I wish I had like the video clip of Ryan at that point.
Because
I don't even know what to do here.
Here's us being naive ultra runners. Ryan doesn't even like run. So Ryan was just, he's a mountain biker and he's like, yeah, I'll join you on this 9 mile, you know, the jaunt. So yeah, he's just there looking at us as we're laying in the dirt.
And you could tell he's just like so uncomfortable. He's like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do right now.
Yeah, but we eventually got back up and we kept moving, and we basically walked this whole like 8 mile section.
Any of that. Yeah.
Just going so slow. And during this whole time, looking back, we were so focused on everything that was going wrong. And we had pretty much decided that
we were done.
The night before the race, we had had this talk where we were like, okay, the only way we're going to quit is if we physically like can't walk for some reason. Harm, long-term damage would be done to our body. If it's short-term damage, we can't quit, you know? And so I remember that coming back into my head as where, you know, we've decided we're going to quit, but we haven't got to the aid station. So we're still moving there. And then we're literally like a quarter mile from the aid station.
And this is what happened. Like, I still had decided I was done. And then you started talking all positive and stuff. And you're like, wait, maybe we can do this. And I was like, no, we decided we're done. Stop.
And what had led to that newfound hope in me was I had received a text from my good friend. And I think, you know, it was God inspired that he sent me this text where he just basically told me, you're not done. And, you know, he had no idea what was going on at this point, but he just said, you're not done. You're going to keep moving forward unless you're going to die, then obviously stop. But then he said, he started talking about, remember what you're doing this for and who you're doing this for. We're married. We don't have any kids, but he brought up, he's like, you're going to be able to tell this story to your kids one day, and you'll be able to help them believe in themselves that they can accomplish anything as you tell them about how you were in the dumps but kept moving forward and finished that 100-mile race. And I remember that really hit home. And, you know, that was where me finding a reason outside of myself, I was like, I can't quit because I got to show this for my future kids and posterity that, you know, I want them to believe in themselves. I want them to know that they can do hard things. So we got to keep moving.
I love hearing the story and especially the roller coaster of emotions, right? And only the people I think that have been in those situations, because it's so easy to say until I'm crawling across the finish line, but mentally, when you get that kind of exhaustion, all of a sudden we lose interest for one and things become incredibly difficult. And the reasons that we would have never considered suddenly become very persuasive as to why this is no longer a good idea. So hearing you guys work through it and continue on.
I think everybody has that pep talk of the night before.
Oh yeah.
There's not going to be anything that's going to cause me to quit unless I'm about to die. We tell everybody that. And then we get them. We're like, I'm dying. And
I'm like, done. I'm dying.
I'm trying to create reasons in my head that I'm done, that I've got to be done.
Yeah.
Can I say what motivated me to keep going? Cause
yes,
I feel like, so Jacob got that message and then he was starting to, you know, feel better. And at that point I was like, I still was like, but I want to be done, like be done with me, you know? So we got to the aid station where our families were, and it was some of my family, some of Jacob's family. And this was, for me, was the most touching part. I just remember seeing Uncle David and my dad, and there were a whole bunch of other people, but those were the two who were really like rooting us on. And they just like, they had so much energy and so much hope and so much faith that we were going to finish, and they just weren't going to let us stop. And just seeing like their love and how excited they were and how much they believed in us, like that was when I was like, okay, like I'm going to keep going, like for our family and our friends and everyone who came out to support us. And I just remember feeling a lot of, I don't know, just the love and the support in that moment. I was like, man, we are so blessed. So that's what made me decide to keep going.
I think that's a good point. I think it's one of those things that I try to do, and I encourage others to do when they're doing their first ultras, or even if they've been doing multiple ultra runs, is that when you go to the aid stations, you begin to recognize the people that are there to support you, even if it's volunteers, if it's your family members. There are a lot of people that are sacrificing for your success, and they don't have to do that. And it's one of those things that if you can just get out of your own head for that moment and just see them, right, it will change your entire mentality and and how you perceive what you're going through and your gratitude towards them, and it will motivate you. And so it's a great point that you made. And I think it's one of those things that's clear for a lot of people when they see it, how it can kind of get them to that next step or even to the next aid station, right? It's great.
For sure.
Like, we got into this sport because we wanted to do something hard, but actually what I think what's kept us in this sport is exactly what Melody's saying about the love and the support and just the community and how people rally around each other and just help one another out. That's what made us fall in love with it. And like, that was our first experience with it right there. And yeah, and we've just seen it countless times afterwards since then of just, you know, how people are there to help one another out here in this community.
It seems to be a recurring theme that it's important, at least at some point, to have something outside of ourselves, right? And so there's now the family there that gives you a reason to go, okay, I was ready to be done for me, but now I have this outside reason to keep pushing on. And two, Charlie Engel, I think it was the first one to say on the show, but we've talked about it in several different ways, is don't make a decision in a low spot, right? Because you had all but said, hey, I'm done. This is terrible. You know, it's never going to get better. to Jeff's point, make it to the next aid station, you never know what that pickup is going to be. Mm-hmm. And so if you can just keep moving forward, I think that story illustrates both those points pretty well.
Amen. Amen.
So one of the things I picked up on your podcast as you were walking through this foray into your first 100 together, right? It strengthened your marriage is one of the things that you guys said. And it got my attention because, you know, one of those, when we talk about even running together and we're friends, like we would kill one another.
Can't stand it.
Right. And so running with my wife or him running with his wife would be a challenge and stuff. But for you to go through that experience and to go through the highs and lows and obviously getting frustrated with one another during the course, because you kind of allude to that a little bit, right? You still come out of that in the fact that you feel like you have a stronger relationship. What about your relationship do you feel got strengthened through the experience?
So I think it's our ability to communicate.
Yeah.
Really got better because, and it wasn't just the 100 mile, it was with the training through it. And it still happens today when we go for runs together, especially long runs together. So it's basically our marriage counseling, and we've learned a lot about how to be open and communicate with each other.
And we've learned how to tell each other what we need. Like we've learned how to say like, hey, I'm starting to feel grumpy right now. I don't really feel like talking. Can you like run up ahead so I can have some space or like, will you please stop singing because it's really bugging me? or Jacob hates when I ask him like, how are you doing? He hates that question. So I've learned, so he's asked me to stop asking him that. I don't ask him that anymore. So we just know how to communicate our needs a little bit better too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I picked up and one of the things that caught my attention was, I'll get to what caught my attention first. I'll kind of explain it maybe this way first. When you're running an ultra with somebody else or you're pacing somebody, you're both going through your own ups and downs as an individual. Like you have your own highs and lows. You don't always lay in the dirt together like you did collectively from 60 to 70. Instead, most of the time you're in a long run or in an ultra and, you know, Melody, you could be having a low point or high point and Jake could be having a high or low at a different time. And so one of the things that that I think I heard from the way you described some of the stuff is, Melody, you made a comment to him when he was talking about the run and everything, and he was explaining how he felt during the time. And he said, well, that was your experience. This was my experience. And it was something that I felt like what y'all got out of the time together was listening and respecting the fact that the individual that you're with is not going to experience the run the exact same way as each other, but you're going to experience it differently, which kind of gives you the opportunity to value that person as a unique individual other than yourself. And so that was one of the things I picked up even just from other cues you were saying. And so I thought it was just really interesting some of the ways that you have grown as a couple through it all.
I love that point.
No, yeah. And that was coming to mind for me too, is we've kind of learned how to almost like accept the other person for what is going on with them, you know, totally. and how they're going to take it and what they're going to do in these situations and not try to change them or don't change how they're feeling, but just, you know, accept your spouse. Accept
that maybe you're having a bad run today and you're going a little bit slow or vice versa. It's okay if I can't keep up with you or vice versa. And we're just, you're where you are.
Right, accepting now. Each other and not trying to change them.
Now for 99% of our listeners whose spouse will not run with them, but my message to them is, here's the good news. You have already learned that your wife or husband or partner, whatever it is, respects your time to do what you want to do on your own. And that's also the win as well. It's like, it's the same concept. Either you're doing it together or you're separately, but you're valuing the other person to allow them to do those types of things. So
totally. I also think though the communication piece, pacer, support crew, like there's some element of that same type of thing of learning how to work that dynamic. And we've talked a lot about that, but it is one of the things when we were talking and planning, that was one of the comments that I made, is I'm impressed with your level of communication and the way that you guys even talk about it in your episodes, just kind of what you were feeling, this and that, and being able to talk through that without that tension that could be there with people, right? When egos can get in the way. So I commend you on that. All right. So we do have quite a bit more that we want to talk about. So we're going to jump ahead, but here's a question that we want to know, because as we're looking, right, we're researching. So obviously a big part of your podcast was that kind of ends season one, and then season two comes in about a year later. And when we're looking at Ultra sign up, it was about a year later, and doesn't mean there wasn't stuff in there, but So the question is, you guys already said, hey, we had this pattern of do stuff and then get kind of stagnant and do stuff, get kind of stagnant. Is that what happened
You caught us.
I guess we're not very consistent. No. We're learning how to be more consistent.
You caught us. Yeah, we totally stopped running after the 100. Like not totally, probably like 5 to maybe 15 miles if it was a good week.
Well, and we told ourselves, we're like, yeah, like we both had plans of like, we're going to maintain, you know, 25, 30 yeah. miles a week. Like, but when we didn't have a race to train for nope. it just didn't happen.
Nope.
Was it just a matter of not having a goal out there, or was there any experience of like a letdown, right? You had this big high of completing, you had this big goal that you're aimed at for months and months. And I know for me, after my first 100, I call it the running depression. You know, people talk about the post-race blues, different things. Was there any aspect of that that you went through?
Yes. I feel like we both were really depressed. We talked about it a lot where we were like, that was our focus. Like Trail to 100 was our life. And when it was over, we were just like, well, now what do we do? It's done. Like, what now?
It was kind of depressing. It was like this big, I thought that we'd run 100 miles and I'd be a forever changed man. And I just go kick butt at everything else that I do in life because I ran 100 miles, but that was wrong.
we still say that though. We're like, we can do it because we've ran 100 miles. Yeah.
I do think though that's actually a really good distinction, because it's true in the sense that, you know, you've proven to yourselves that you can do what it takes to do hard things. Mm. But to your point, Jacob, I think there's also a lot of times we tend to think if we get there, that's like the new norm, right? That's just who I am now, versus like, oh, it was just this milestone in the process. So you have that big letdown, and then you obviously have done things since. Is that something that you continue to go through after bigger events? Is it something you've learned to work through at all? Any different? Talk about that.
I think what I'm learning to work through it, after every race, I'm getting better and better at keeping the good habits up. Because ultimately, why we wanted to get into ultra running was, you know, to untap our potential, become disciplined, create good habits, you know, use it as a way to propel me forward in every aspect of life, not just running. And so it still continues a little bit, but I think the time period's shortening and just getting better and better. So like one thing that we learned is from a previous guest that we've had on our podcast, and he also has his own podcast, Joe Corcione, has the Everyday Ultra podcast. And he brought up the idea, never always have a race signed up for after the race. And I didn't really get that, or it didn't register in my head until I heard him say that, because we're always, at least me for sure, is always falling in that, okay, I did this big race, now I don't have to run for, you know, 3 months.
But well, that's kind of our rule now, is before we run the race, we have to have another race planned. So we run the race, and instead of having, you know, our dead time, we just immediately have the next goal to shoot for. So we just kind of plan further ahead. We just kind of take it a day at a time. That's another thing that we've worked on, just, you know, slowly improving our habits, being better every day, giving ourselves grace when we mess up.
There's the book, Atomic Habits, where he talks about don't miss something two times in a row. And I think that was really big for us. Like, okay, if I didn't say I wanted to wake up at 5:30 and I didn't wake up till 6 this morning, okay, well, I cannot allow that to happen tomorrow, you know? And so, okay, it happened, let it go. Let's move on to tomorrow. It's not going to happen twice.
I appreciate that feedback. It was definitely a lesson for me to learn. And even, I mean, Dean Karnes is in his new book. He even talked about that he still has little mini blues after all, but he just knows it's part of his process and, you know, kind of works through it. It's definitely something I still go through, but to your point, I've gotten better over time. And part of it is just recognizing that it is like, oh, here it comes, instead of being like, oh, what happens? Like, why don't I ever want to run again? You know, like, I actually I signed up for a race after that first 100, and then I just never trained and never did it.
I recall we were going to do it together.
I was like, nah, I'm not up for it. But so if you're listening and you're recognizing that, I think we've talked about it before, but it is normal and a lot of people go through it and don't think it's just you, but discipline obviously helps.
Yeah, I don't experience that.
Yeah, Jeff is the always have something on the calendar. And
well, even if I don't have something on the calendar, so I have a long-term goal to run Western States at some point. And so I'm not in, and I know I try to do it. I do a qualifying race every year so I can get more tickets. But because it's on my bucket list of races and I have to train for, then it's always there. And so everything I do is with the long-term vision of the fact that I'm going to run Western at some point, and the things I do will get me there. And so for me, it's not that I have to have a race per se on the calendar anymore. I just have a longer term vision of where I want to go. And I already have the race after Western States and I've thrown out there is that I want to do a 200, but I don't want that to get in the way or interfere with Western States plan. And so I don't know when it's going to happen and I got to qualify every year. So I have my secondary goal after the fact is already. And so for me, I don't experience the letdown. I actually feel a letdown when I can't run after a race. Like I'm ready to go. Let's go run, even though I know I need to take the time off.
I've never thought to ask you this question. Do you experience an extreme high with the race?
Depends. I have on a couple of them, but to me, I view most of them as training. They're not training, but I mean, like I look forward to them like as a race. Like I don't think like doing a 50 miler is a training run, but it's just what I do.
Right.
It's just what I do. And it's fun. I look forward to hanging out with the people.
That's good. You're very like balanced, emotionally regulated human.
Oh, you don't know me at all.
but he is. And so between the two of us, and this reflects both in our working relationship and our running apparently, right? Jeff, he calls it the slow drip, right? God. He is the daily chip away and I'm the like, big idea. Don't want to do anything. Big idea. Like I'm overwhelmed, right? And so I'm more of the... It's not even emotional up and down, but it really is. It's excitement and then like so apparently that's the way we race too.
Yeah, and I'm an introvert, so it's just so exhausting for me.
All right, but enough about us. We started talking about us. You originally signed up for the U100 in 2020. It gets canceled again in 2021, right? And then so finally in 2022, I think in the podcast, both of you were going to run it. And I'll be honest, in the research, I didn't get to this part. So Jacob, you did run it. Melody, what was the reason that you ended up not running it?
Yeah, good question. To be totally transparent, I just wasn't mentally ready. Okay. I just wasn't there. And I don't know, I just had to make a decision for myself and realize that if I did do it, I wasn't doing it because I wanted to. I was doing it because I felt like I had to. And I was a little bit disappointed. I was like, man, that would have been so cool for the podcast if we both came back and did the U. But at that point in my life, I just wasn't ready to tackle 100.
Yep.
Totally spot on.
Yeah, totally fair.
Spot on. The reason we asked though is because the end of the episode where you recap the solo 100 that you guys did together, you indicated that you saw yourself doing another one and Jacob questioned his ability of whether or not he would.
I don't want to question his ability.
Oh no, he did. He was very hesitant.
But he questioned.
I probably questioned my ability.
I just don't know.
That's more motivation. I don't think it was the ability. I think you said like, hey, I think I got more too, but I just don't know.
But it's cool. Yeah. Back to your point, Melody, anytime you run an ultra, you know, 50K, 50 mile, 100 mile, whatever the distance is, if you are not mentally prepared to do it, you should not toe the line because mentally is the game. That is the game. Yeah. And if you're not ready, then you're not ready. And there's no shame in saying it. That's the right response to protect your own sanity.
Yeah, but there's a line there, right? Because that can quickly become, I'm scared, I'm nervous, I'm stuff to, hey, mentally, I'm not ready. So
that's different.
It's a self, but that's what I'm saying though, for anybody listening, like it's never going to feel comfortable.
Yeah. I didn't pick that. I didn't sense that. Like, it wasn't fear-based. Like you should be afraid. I'm nervous.
No, I'm not sensing that. From
right.
Her.
Right.
I trust that. I'm just saying, I know me personally, and that would be an easy way to go. Oh, so for the statement that you made, right, was, hey, anytime you're not feeling mentally, you should not toe the line. So for everybody listening, that was just kind of one of those, like, I don't know if you guys follow Andy Glaze. I just, He was one of our previous guests. He runs all kinds of 100 milers, and he just posted something that said, "Hey, you guys all think this is easy for me, but like, I'm so nervous before every race that I'm almost dry heaving, you know," like he said, "the reason I enjoy them is because they're so scary and hard." Yeah. And that like hit me. It was like, okay, so it's never going to feel comfortable, but I agree. What I didn't pick that up either from what you were saying. You probably felt more like I was when I was like, I'm just not going to do this race. Like, I'm not into it. I'm not ready.
No, her rationale was that she felt like she had to do it because for the podcast. And
right, I think, but
that's bad.
Yeah, that is bad. I agree with that. I agree with that.
No, no, that I'm really glad that you brought that up. I feel like that's exactly what was going on in my head. I was like, okay, am I choosing not to do this because I'm scared, or am I like, I really had to do some soul searching and make sure that I was being honest with myself. And I do think you had to find that balance of like, I guess you just have to be honest with yourself. Like, do I really honestly feel like I'm not mentally ready to do this, or am I just chickening out? Am I just scared? So that was kind of the like debate I had in my head, and I had to kind of figure it out. So, and ultimately decided that I just was not mentally there. So,
yeah.
Right. Nope. So if you're just scared, you should run it.
Right.
I agree.
Yeah. Self-awareness, do that deep diving, but know that it will always be scary. Essentially.
Oh yeah.
It should be.
So we want to get kind of some key takeaways, talk about some tactical and lessons learned and that type of thing. And so Jacob, we're going to start with you. You did the Ute 100, which was your second. You're signed up for your third now, but interested in either just from training, running your first one, what have you learned that you were able to take into the subsequent ultras that really helped you out?
First and foremost, the mindset of, for me, I can't think big picture. When I'm at mile 20, I can't think I have 80 more miles to go. And that's what I was doing during that first one. Like when I was at that low point in that first 100 with Melody, and I was like, well, I've already run 60 miles. I feel wrecked, and I'm supposed to now run 40 more, you know, like that's what made me want to quit, because I just kept dwelling on, I have this much further to go and I've already ran 60 miles. How am I supposed to drag my body 40 more? So it really taught me the aid station approach, where all I think about is like the next 8-10 miles, whatever it is to the next aid station. All I have to think about is, what do I need to do now to get me to the next aid station? And then once I get to that next aid station, what do I need to do while I'm there to get me to the following one? And that's it. And just approaching it that way. And secondly, I guess, along with the mindset, I learned that pain comes in waves, or the low points come in waves. I read a book on fasting. I got into fasting for a while. And one of his big things was similar to that. He said, hunger comes in waves. When you're fasting, you just tell yourself, I'm just going to give it 30 minutes and see if I still have this hunger pain. And so I applied that to ultra running as well. Like, again, on my second 100, it was about that same time period, about 3 a.m. And it's like mile 66. Feel like I can barely keep my eyes open. The gut's starting to go. I remember going through that, and it was very similar feeling to what I had the first time, but I felt like my response was much more, I guess you could say, mature. Because I was able to recognize like, oh, I've been through this before. I just got to keep moving. Don't lay down on the dirt and feel sorry for yourself, but just keep moving, and this is going to pass, and the sun's going to rise, and you're going to get better. I think that was one of the biggest, just the mental mindset of, you know, aid station to aid station, and everything's going to pass. It comes in waves. Just keep moving and things will get better.
That was good. Yeah. Do you think you've evolved as a runner in your desire to run, like how you approach running in general?
I feel like you've evolved.
Yeah. I've evolved because, yeah, originally it was just, I'm just out here to push myself and do something hard. But I mean, now I'm just much more alert about everything. I've never understood the phrase, listen to your body. When I first started running, I'm like, when I run, I want to stop. So if I listen to my body, I'd never run. But now I get it. Your brain, you do have to analyze your body when you're out there on your long runs. And even just from your day-to-day training and nutrition and what you're putting in your body every day is going to affect you both mentally and physically. And I guess I'm just able to listen to my body more and just be a little more tactical about the approach to running and to also just living life, I guess. Well, you know, you have to.
Right. And well, to see how you've evolved, go back and listen to the very first episode of Children 100 and then listen to this podcast. You're a different human.
Yeah. And not only that, so we'll talk to Melody in a second about some of the coaching aspects, but I mean, fairly recent development, right? You started working with a coach, Mike McKnight, and so I would imagine just from the like, oh, I'm just going to tackle 100 to now you've done a few of these things. Now you're getting coaching input. I would imagine it's a much more measured approach to how you're tackling these things. How's that been working with him?
Oh, it's been so amazing. Because, all right, I mean, like, so my wife is a coach as well. And Melody has tried to give me coaching quite a bit.
Doesn't work.
Of course.
Jacob went and spent lots of money on another coach.
Just doesn't work to be coached by a family member. Because naturally I start to fight back. I'm like, well, what if I want to do it this way? Like, why do I have to do it your way? Like, I want to do it my way. But not having a lot of running background before getting into ultras, I just thought running was just running. And I just, you know, just give me the miles I'm supposed to run and I'll go do it. Hiring a coach for the first time, I'm doing more cross training than I've ever done before. Melody's given me a lot of cross training, but I've never done it. So now I'm actually doing it. And it's just like Tabata workouts, like core workouts 3 times a week, just a lot of body weights, pull-ups, push-ups. Melody's heard me complain. I'll be like, geez, like he's got me working out for like 2.5 hours. I got like an hour of doing body weight stuff and then I got to go do an hour run still. But what I'm noticing though, is I'm feeling more strong.
And you're getting buff.
Melody likes it. I guess a big reason, as we kind of go back to one of your questions about like the cycle of stop of running a big race and then not running, is after every race, my body feels broken after going through a training cycle up to this point. And just has felt like it needed a break because it's just felt broken and weak. It's almost like I got weaker through the training process. And I think I credit that looking back. And as I'm now trying to do better, my miles have been ramping up as I get ready for my next 100 in June. I'm feeling strong again. Before I ran, I used to just, you know, I worked out 5 days a week, just like went to the gym a few times, then went for a little run a few times a week. And I remember feeling strong and I haven't felt that in a long time, but for the first time in a long time, I'm running more miles, but I'm feeling stronger as I do it. And I think, you know, big point of that is I'm now doing a lot of cross training, more body weight stuff and more core stuff.
I think it's great.
That's awesome.
Real quick, what I was going to say is what you don't know is that you're just paying Mike McKnight to be a email forwarder because Melody's feeding him the plan. that's the only way she can get you to do her plan.
Valid point. So speaking of being a running coach, though, Melody, you had this experience, obviously, doing your first 100 as well. And you coach runners of all distances. So you coach those who do 5Ks. And I think you also coach all the way up to ultras, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did your personal experience begin to impact the way that you coach runners?
I feel like I can put myself in their shoes better. Mm-hmm. Like it changed my life and I've learned so much and I want to help other people do the same thing. So I don't know, I guess, cause I know what it's like to be there. I know what it's like to struggle. I know what it's like to doubt. And because I've been on the other side of that doubt, I can kind of be that hope and that faith for them that like things will get better. Like you're going to be able to push through this and you're going to learn and grow by pushing through this.
I like it. And so what is something that if you were to, other than your husband, because he won't listen to you, If you were to work with somebody like myself or Jeremy, what are some things you think we could do to improve as runners? Now, you don't know us, but like when you think about runners in general, right? So I guess it doesn't even matter to us. We would do what you said, unlike your husband. So what are things that you think people, runners, should do to improve themselves?
I mean, honestly, I'm a really big believer in a very personalized plan because everyone needs something different. So honestly, like if I were to coach you two, I would get like a really detailed in-depth analysis of like, what is your running history? How much do you run right now? How much do you strength train? How much do you stretch? And depending on the person, maybe you need more speed work. A lot of trail runners need more speed work. Maybe you need more strength training, which that's another thing a lot of trail runners need is most runners need to strength train more. And there's some people who are just really naturally talented and they're doing all the right things, but maybe it's their mindset. Like maybe they need to change their mindset. One thing that I have all of my athletes do, one thing that they hate every single day. So whether it's like I have one client who she hates planks with a passion. So she does planks every single day. I don't want people to be burnt out, but I think developing that mental toughness is super important. So I always have them do things that they don't like to do. The cool thing about coaching is I feel like it's more of an art than a science. There's a lot of science in it, which is super fun. I love the science aspect, but a lot of it is just kind of like, you're just kind of painting a picture and you're learning the athlete and you're figuring out their psyche and what works for them and what doesn't work for them. And I can go all day. I just think it's the best thing in the world. So,
but that's the point. So the question to ask you, like, how can runners improve? Like when I ask a coach that type of question, your answer is exactly what a coach should say, is that it's individualized. And so I think those who are listening, you know, that are looking for coaches and stuff, they're going to want to find a coach who's going to kind of understand their running history and understand what their strengths and weaknesses are. And all coaches should do that. And so, you know, we joke and say, what would you tell us to do to improve? But you can't know that until you know your runners. And so for those, like I said, listening and you're looking to get a coach, always find somebody who's going to individualize based on what you're currently able to do and what your strengths and weaknesses are. And I kind of like what you said about having to do some things that they hate.
I want to know what your thing is that you do every day.
Yeah, that you hate.
Side planks. I hate side planks. They're the worst things in the world.
I mean, I could probably come up with worse things than side planks, but
true. Okay. Very true.
And that said though, too, I'm assuming, like you said, there is the science of it. And so, yes, I fully agree that everybody's going to be individualized. At the same time, I'm sure you have some foundational stuff and you kind of reference them, right? Form, probably a good mix of either aerobic running plus speed stuff, cross training, strength training. I think there's probably those foundational things that, like you said, once you know where somebody falls in that you can help kind of put that together. But if you had to say, hey, here's not three things that people should do, but three things that people probably aren't focusing on that they should. If I've met you for the first time ever and said, I'm just starting running, what should I go research? What are the two to three things that you'd be like, if you can win at these things, then you're good.
I would say the very first thing I'd look into is 80/20 running. And I would say to buy the book 80/20 running by Matt Fitzgerald. Mm-hmm. And that is, for anyone who doesn't know, that is 80% of your run volume is at a low intensity and 20% of your run volume is at high intensity. And you want to avoid the like middle ground. So I'd say to look into that. And then I would say to look into speed work, learn how to incorporate speed work in your training. And then I would say, look at strength training. Actually, I would reverse that. I'd say 80/20, then look at strength training and then learn how to incorporate the speed work.
Awesome. So for everybody listening, there's your homework. If you're looking
if you hate
stuff,
to do it every
that's
day
right, and do side planks.
Exactly.
With Melody. All right. Well, we're getting close to the time that I promised you we were going to try to be done. However, obviously we've talked about your podcast. We know why you started it, but you are continuing it. You guys have a huge heart for new runners, for helping people. So let's just talk about kind of where you're at now. Give us the breakdown of kind of the current vision of the podcast, who it's for, who you guys really target, why you love it. Let's talk about that.
We have our mission statement for Trail to 100, and it's to help others unlock their potential through running their first ultra marathon. So when we ourselves first got into ultra running, we didn't consider ourselves runners. We just heard of this crazy thing called ultras where you get to dig in and find who you are and unlock your potential, basically. And that's what drew us. We just wanted to push ourselves. And so we don't consider ourselves anything special in the running world. I mean, anything special really in general. We consider ourselves pretty much average Joes. And the podcast, as we've continued forward, is, you know, is for those average Joes, those people who maybe are finding themselves in a rut of, you know, they're working their 9-to-5s or finding themselves in a place where they need that challenge. They need something to ignite them in order to, you know, push beyond what they're doing right now in their lives. We like to especially just talk to first-time ultra runners on the podcast, because that's who we're gearing everything towards, just for those people who want to run their first ultra marathon and just cross that finish line. You know, you're not in it to become a sponsored athlete or you know, podium, but you just want to do something hard and cross that finish line. And so that's what we have started doing. We bring on a lot of first-time ultra runners to hear their experiences, to hear how they trained, how they got themselves through the race, you know, and how they were able to still have a life outside of ultra running.
Because the best coach is someone who's just a couple steps ahead of you.
Yeah, because we ourselves, you know, we're still pretty new to the sport. We just got in it, you know, in 2019, 2020. We've only run a handful of ultras. And so we just want to help others out so that they can have some tools and find some inspiration to where they can believe in themselves, that they can get across that first finish line of their ultra marathon.
That's cool. One of the things that you say often on your podcast, as you can tell, we've listened to way too many of them at this point, huh? Joking. We've listened to quite a few. One of the things you say often is that you believe that anyone can run an ultra. Why is it that you feel that way?
I actually just put a post up on Instagram about this today. I really feel like, as cliche as this sounds, I believe that anybody can do anything that they set their mind to. And whenever I say that, everyone always throws something at me like, well, what if someone doesn't have any legs? I can't run an ultra. But guess what? Like, mountain wheelchairs exist. Like, you can always be creative and figure out how to do it. Maybe you have to do it different from someone else. But if you really want to do something, you can figure out how to do it and you can do it. And that's something that, like, I want to help teach people through ultras. I feel like running an ultra is one of those things where people are just immediately like, oh, there's no way I could do that. But the thing is, you can. Anybody can do it. And that's what's cool about it.
To go along with that, I remember, like, after we ran our first 100, you know, I thought I would have this, like, wow, look how amazing I am moment, but it's
pretty anti-climatic.
It really didn't hit. And then I remember looking back, I'm just like, wow, running 100 miles wasn't as crazy as, like, I necessarily thought it up in my mind. I was like, it just really was about how we spent our time, you know? And so we just decided to spend some more time running.
Like, are you going to spend your time, like, crocheting, or are you going to spend your time walking? Or are you going to spend your time running in the mountains? Like, it's
exactly
just where you put your time.
It's just how we decided to spend our time. And I'm like, it really wasn't anything that grand, or it didn't feel like it in the moment. It was just like, oh, I guess I just spent my time running. And so I was able to run 100 miles.
So to clarify, when you say spend time, are you talking about training, spending time?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. 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 It's just like any talent or hobby, or everyone has a certain amount of time. It's just where, like, if you just spend the time on your feet and you train, you can do it.
Yeah. I mean, like, for me, when people tell me that they can't see themselves ever doing a 50 mile or 100 mile or whatever the distance is, like, I think anybody can do it. I say the same thing to them. I believe you can run 100 miles. And they're like, but there's no way. I said, well, there's no way you could do it today.
Yes.
And I think you've got to be okay with that. But I do believe you can do it. You just may not be able to do it today. But if you want to do it, then there's some things you can put in place to make that happen and stuff. And so I agree. I think anyone can run an ultra. I think it's a good theme that you run throughout your podcast. I do.
I do like the mission that you guys are about and the evolution of it. I like how you started just documenting your own story and then decided you're going to continue on with it with a different vision for it. And I think it works well for you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. And I mentioned this morning, but I'm a big Tom Bilyeu and Impact Theory fan. And that one of the things he talks about is he calls it the only belief that matters. Pretty much exactly what you just said is if you believe you can get better at doing something, or that if you work hard at doing something, you can get better. And that's all you're saying is, hey, if I spend my time learning how to run and spend the time on my feet, then I can do this thing that right now feels impossible. And so I think what you're trying to do, it sounds like, is trying to instill the belief in people, because that's probably the big obstacle, right? Not that they can't move their legs for that long to get prepared, but that they don't believe at that point that it's possible for them. So I think that's pretty cool.
Exactly. Well, and some people just don't want to do it. Like,
which is fine.
Yeah. You just have to decide if it's something you want to spend your time doing or not.
Yeah.
We probably just wouldn't be friends with them.
What's that?
And we just wouldn't be friends with them.
Well, like I said before, if my whole goal in life was to learn to, I mean, who knows if I could accomplish it, but was to learn to, you know, deadlift 500 pounds. Maybe I could do it. I just have zero interest, right?
And so yeah,
right.
There's exactly. People that don't want to run 100 miles, but I think the strong majority of people at least would have the interest, which was me. I did not like running. But once I realized it was potentially possible, well, that changed the way I looked at the whole situation, right? But right.
And now you're stuck with it.
Now I'm stuck with it.
Yeah.
We can always change it.
Just know. Take the S off.
Yeah, the ultra running guy. Meet the ultra running guy. I'm out.
The old guy.
Well, look, I really enjoy what you guys are doing. And from a format standpoint, it sounds like right now you're doing, I think it's cool. So you guys do episodes with just you and you're kind of talking about different things and talking to each other and debriefing races, that kind of thing. And then you also do bring on guests, which one of your recent guests were very, partial to, which was Steve Epifano, who helped us get this podcast launched. So it was awesome to see him on there and hear him on there. And he's always great. Look, we can't tell you how much we appreciate having you on. This has been just an incredible discussion for everybody listening. Make sure that you are checking out Trail to 100. And as far as where to find you guys, obviously on Instagram, it's Trail to 100. I think it's at Trail to 100. Facebook, I think you're on there. Melody, your coaching stuff, correct me if I'm wrong, but at the Pine Tree Runner.
Yes.
Is that the best place?
Yeah.
And then I mentioned in the intro, and we didn't really get a chance to talk about it, but you do have, it's pretty cool. So you are a black belt. You've got the self-defense program. Where's the best place for people to find out about that if they want to learn about that?
If you go to my Instagram, like you mentioned, the Pine Tree Runner, the link is in my bio. You can go there and there's all the information there. Or you can even DM me on Instagram and I'd be happy to talk about it.
Fantastic. Well, we appreciate what you guys do. Obviously, it's a big passion of ours. And I think a lot of our audiences are probably, kind of cross, right? It's good. It's just a good mix and a good mesh. But thank you guys so much for taking the time to be with us tonight.
For sure.
Thanks
for having us. We appreciate it a whole bunch. It was fun hanging out for a little bit.
Well, and so we're going to keep you around because we're going to do a game for Patreon. We're really excited about that. And we're going to mix it up a little bit because we have a married couple and that's going to be fun
for us. It will be for us.
It will be fun for us. It'll be fun for you guys.
I'm a little bit nervous.
Yeah, 100% should be.
But for everybody that is plugging in again, thank you so much for the time. Our message is just show up. So continue to show up. The ask also, please share, review, give us the feedback, send us a message, tell us what you like, don't like, all that good stuff. But until next time, cut.
By the way, I'm Jeff. This is Jeremy. We can figure out who y'all are easier.
We're excited to interview you guys. I was thinking earlier today as I was reading through everything and getting ready, I'm like, geez, it's going to be hard to not ask the questions back.
No fair.
Save it. And I'll be like, save it.
No fair. Look at those fancy mics they have. We suck.
And you're not like analyzing us or judging us really hard.
Oh, no.
He didn't say that.
He did not guarantee that will happen.
We got all night. 9:30. Let's go.
They're fine.
Yeah, we're starting a new format where we just talk forever.
We're going Joe Rogan style here.
We're going to cut this out, right?
Negative.
We wouldn't have bloopers if it wasn't for me.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Ogden is the best. When we moved here for work, and we had no idea how awesome the running life was, and we just lucked out. So
we did this yesterday, and I did a terrible first intro, and
we were like, just kidding. We're not going to do an intro. Guys, we'll do it later.
Scrap this. Like, let's just move on.
Also, your logo is awesome, by the way.
Thank you.
It's super cool.
I like how the dude's kind of taking a dump on my shoulder.
Yeah.
Is that going to make the reel?
You guys are amazing podcast hosts. Like, you just do a stellar job of making it fun and comfortable. And it was just really enjoyable
maybe
for us as
guests.
You are
the next Trail Runner Nation.
Yeah.
All right, listen, thank you so much. We recognize the fact that you are probably just hanging on just for a couple more minutes as you're finishing up your run. But really, we do want to give you a huge thank you for the constant support that you've shown us. We hear you and we feel you. And the best way for us to continue to grow is for you to share us with your friends. Tell them what you put in your ears when you're out there on a long run. Hit the like button, leave us a comment, leave a review, and give us some direct feedback on what you like about the show and also what you don't like. We're here to improve and do it for you.
And it really means the world. And listen, if you would like to support financially, you can connect with us on Patreon at patreon.com/theultrarunningguys, or you can use the support link in the show notes. Any and all support goes directly back into growing the show and helping us get better at what we love to do, which is to serve all of you. And with that, finish up that run, get cleaned up, and just show up
clean.
Clean.